Thanks for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. Now that the primaries are over, the real battles begin. They're increasingly expensive. And this year, there's a twist. Organizations advocating for a particular candidate are no longer required to disclose their donors. Joining me to talk about the implications of the new rules on campaign spending, Sheila Krumholz, the Center for Responsive Politics, Jan Baron. He's an attorney in private practice specializing in election law, former general counsel to the Republican National Committee. Brody Mullins is a reporter for the Wall Street Journal, and Jane Mayer is staff writer at The New Yorker. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Feel free to join us on Facebook or send us a tweet. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Diane.
Jan Baron, explain what the rules are this time around, how they're different, and why.
Well, we're talking about spending by outside groups and individuals that is regulated by federal law in connection with federal campaigns. So we're talking about this year campaigns for the U.S. House and U.S. Senate. And the rules for some time have been that certain individuals and certain groups can spend money without limit as long as they're not collaborating with the campaigns. They're called independent expenditures. And we've had some changes over the last 10 years, partly caused by the McCain-Feingold law, partly caused by Supreme Court decisions, which define who can spend money and under what circumstances and when the money that's being spent is subject to public disclosure through filings with the Federal Election Commission. The Supreme Court earlier this year in Citizens United versus FEC ruled that corporations and unions cannot be prohibited from spending money that expressly advocates the election or defeat of named candidates, that says vote for or against candidate Jones or candidate Smith. Technically, prior to that time, corporations and unions could finance public advertising that didn't have these so-called magic words, but simply said, well, candidate Smith or candidate Jones has this position on this issue. Call up candidate Jones and candidate Smith and tell them what you think about that position. Now these content restrictions have been eliminated for corporations and unions for the first time. And notwithstanding the fact that there's no prohibition, when they make this type of spending, they do have to file these reports disclosing that they spent the money. However, they only have to disclose the source of funding if somebody gives money to a group or to an individual for the specific purpose of financing those particular ads. But if somebody just gives money and says, you know, you can spend this money any way you want to, the source of that funding is not subject to disclosure.
Jan Baron, he's an attorney in private practice specializing in election law. Sheila Krumholz, what difference do you believe these new rulings make in our election process?
These court rulings are tremendously important and concerning to us as an organization that supports transparency and disclosure of money in federal elections. It's really the first time in decades and really almost basically a century of precedent overturned allowing corporations, unions, trade associations to directly influence elections. And now we have no way of knowing really who the true sources of that money are, bankrolling these efforts that are really directly targeting our vote in November.
So what difference does that make?
The difference is that when folks at home sit down to watch these ads, they are no longer going to be able to see the true sources behind them and be able to weigh what is being alleged in these ads against the source. They're not able to consider the source behind these advertisements.
Sheila Krumbold, she's executive director of the Center for Responsive Politics. I want to turn to you now, Brody Mullins. What do we know so far about the amount of money that's been spent on midterm elections and how that compares to 4 years ago?
Well, the thing about campaign finance is that every year is a record year. Every year they spend more than the previous 4 years, and that's certainly going to continue this time. The new element, because of the Citizens United decision, is that corporations and a lot of conservative groups are really dumping money into these elections like never before. We've added up to about $300 million that corporations and conservative groups are going to spend just on the congressional elections. You know, as mentioned earlier, a lot of these donations, most of these donations are undisclosed. They'll primarily be for advertisements in favor of Republican candidates. It'll really make a difference in states like Nevada and California, where there are incumbent Democratic senators who have raised a ton of money, who had a huge fundraising advantage over their Republican challengers. And now all of a sudden you've got these new groups who will come out and help make up that difference.
And what's the overall percentage of money coming from those undisclosed sources now?
It's a really good question, and it's hard to answer because we're still in the middle of the cycle. In the last three election cycles, the amount of money coming from outside groups was only about 10% of the total, which doesn't sound like that much. Now it's growing. It's growing fairly quickly. I think it's gone from 7% to maybe 11 or 12%. That 10% is an aggregate for all campaigns. Now, as you know, only a small percentage of campaigns are competitive. 98% of incumbents win elections. So if you take that that 10% of money and put it into this small percentage of races that are contested, it could mean a really big difference.
Brody Mullins is a reporter for the Wall Street Journal. Turning to you now, Jane Marin, a piece last month you wrote for The New Yorker. You wrote about the billionaire brothers who are waging a war against Obama. Tell us about that story and how it fits in to this question of overall undisclosed sources of money.
Well, it was a close-up look at two particularly big players in American politics right now, Charles and David Koch, who between the two of them own the most part of Koch Industries, which is the second largest privately held company in America. Between the two of them, they're worth $35 billion, which is a fortune that places them number three behind Bill Gates and Warren Buffett in terms of wealth in this country. And they've actually been longtime activists. Oh, it's interesting. They've been involved in American politics since the 1980s and even before. Their father was one of the founders of the John Birch Society, or at least maybe founder is the wrong word. He was in on the ground floor at the very beginning of the John Birch Society. And so he, too, was very politically active. And at any rate, they have been pouring money into American politics for at least 30 years. But they've had a particular sort of metamorphosis during this whole Tea Party period, which is what I was interested in, because basically the Tea Party in some ways represents a popularization of many of the ideas that they've long supported. And it's kind of a big success for them. They are extreme libertarians. They really pretty much demonize the federal government in many ways. They oppose everything from public schools to Social Security to taxes of all kinds to environmental regulations. And these policies are very good for their business because they're petrochemical manufacturers and refiners. And they also are people who just ideologically are opposed to a strong federal government. So anyway, they've been pouring money into American politics and particularly against Obama. And so I was taking a look at the role that just a few very deep-pocketed players with vested interests can have now in American politics. And one of the things I wanted to do in the story was figure out how much money they've really put into American politics and how much they're putting in right now. And I think what I discovered was, as Sheila was saying, that you can't really tell. And no matter how hard you try, you can't pin it down completely because there are so many ways to pour undisclosed money in. I mean, I could figure out that they've spent something like over $100 million over the last 10 years through their various foundations that's declared, but there are many ways that somebody who's worth, you know, $17.5 billion apiece can pour private money into American politics right now, and there'll be no fingerprints.
And this morning's New York Times has a lead editorial that the Koch brothers themselves, apparently are very involved in an anti-climate change state referendum out in California.
Yeah, it's fascinating because this is Proposition 32, it's called. It's a piece of legislation that was pushed by Republican Governor Schwarzenegger and had bipartisan support. It sort of sets targets for cutting down on greenhouse gas emissions and carbon emissions. And they are pouring money into an attempt to overturn it. And they are oil refiners. But the thing is, they don't even do any business in California. They're out of state, big, deep-pocketed interests pushing against California's laws.
Jane Mayer, she's a staff writer for The New Yorker. When we come back, we'll talk more about these undisclosed donors to political campaigns. We continue to talk about unnamed donors to various political campaigns. We're joined now by Congressman Chris Van Hollen, Democrat of Maryland, chairman of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. Good morning to you, sir. It's good to have you with us.
Good morning, Diane.
You and Senator Chuck Schumer proposed legislation that would require more disclosure. Tell us about why you believe this is important.
Well, we think voters have a right to know who is bankrolling these political advertisements on television and let the voters decide, you know, based on the funders, how credible the ad will be. And we think it's fundamental to our democracy that people not be allowed to spend millions of dollars of secret money to influence campaigns. So what we're asking for is transparency and disclosure. Tell the voters who's behind the ads, and you know, let the voters use that information to judge how they're going to respond.
But, Congressman, what difference does it make? Aren't voters going to vote the way they want to vote, no matter whose money is behind an issue or a candidate?
Oh, I don't think so. There's a reason a lot of these secret special interests are spending millions of dollars anonymously. It's because they recognize that it does matter to voters who's paying for something. I mean, hypothetically, if you saw an organization called, the Clean Oceans Campaign, running ads about on an energy issue or oil and gas issue, and you found out it was funded by a big oil and gas company, it would change your perceptions of the ad. And these people who are running the ads know it. Otherwise, they should just disclose voluntarily. I mean, we'd like not to have a law requiring people to disclose, but there's a reason, Diane, that people are keeping this secret, because they know it does matter to voters, and they know that that information will be filtered by the voters in terms of deciding whether to run an ad. I should also point out that these groups, they may be organized around a particular issue, but they can run ads on anything they pick, trying to influence the outcome of elections.
And give me an example of an egregious ad that you've seen that voters do not recognize who or what is behind it.
Well, there's a group called, you pick your ad. I mean, we've made efforts to get lots of these ads off the air, and some of them get pulled off temporarily because they're distortions. But there's Americans First Prosperity is an organization that we know a little bit about now. I mean, it's funded largely by the Koch brothers and Koch Industries. That's K-O-C-H, not Koch as in the real thing. And this is a group of business interests that benefited greatly from the Bush economic policies and agenda, and they would like nothing more than to go back to those same economic policies. And so, people see this title, Americans for Prosperity. I think if they know who's behind it, they'll recognize that this organization is not interested in anyone's prosperity but their own. And that's the reason they're spending all this money. They're spending money to try to elect candidates who support their particular economic agenda. In this case, going back to the Bush economic policies, including getting rid of the Wall Street reform bills that we passed. They've opposed our efforts to clamp down on these perverse tax loopholes that encourage corporations to ship jobs overseas. So they've got a economic agenda. So our point is simply this. Just tell us all the people who are behind it. Tell us who the interest groups are. I mean, let's have transparency and disclosure as part of the democratic process.
And I gather that the House passed your legislation in June, but faced stiff opposition from Republicans in the Senate. The Senate is considering a pared-down version. What would that mean?
Well, I think they're looking at a number of options. As you mentioned, a few months ago, there was a vote, and it was blocked by Republicans. There were enough senators supporting the bill to get it passed. There were more than 50 senators in support of the bill, but you had a filibuster. You had 59 senators supporting the end of cloture, letting the bill come to a vote, but not a single Republican. They, despite a lot of statements over the past year saying that they supported the notion of disclosure and transparency, when it came time to actually vote for greater transparency and disclosure, they weren't there. So Senator Schumer, I think, is looking at some changes. It's not clear what changes would have to be made at this point, and I think he's really extended an invitation to Republican senators saying, you've been on record in the past of saying you support transparency and disclosure. A number of Republican senators were strongly critical of the Supreme Court's decision in Citizens United, and yet they haven't come forward to say, here are the changes we want to see in the legislation.
All right. I want to read to you an email we've just gotten from Andrew, who says, I realize this email is going to be ignored, but I wanted to get this off my chest, so it's not going to be ignored, Andrew. He says, why is it okay for George Soros, Warren Buffett, and Bill Gates to spend millions on Democrats? Why is it okay for labor unions to spend millions on Democrats? But now, all of a sudden, that people who happen to be organized as corporations have the right to contribute, you guys have a problem.
Can I? I've had a lot
this
of...
This is Jane Mayer, Chris Van Hollen.
I've seen a lot of email along this line and a lot of blogging along this line. And one of the things that I wanted to say was I think it's a mistake to assume that just because one writes about, in our case, the Kochs in this instance, that it's giving a pass to George Soros or anybody else. And in particular, at The New Yorker, before I ever wrote about the Kochs, I wrote a 7,985-word piece about George Soros and his influence in the 2004 campaign when he was pouring money into that. We write about, I think the question is a bipartisan question, and the country needs to think a lot about what kind of rules it wants and whether there should be sort of everybody equal as citizens spending, or there should be some uber citizens who get to spend a whole lot more and kind of have extra influence. And right now, that's how things are. And there are those citizens on both sides. That said, I will say, having written both about the Kochs and about George Soros and spent a lot of time on both of them, George Soros is transparent. He believes in transparency. It's one of the things that he can talk you blue in the face about, in fact. But he is very open about where he's spending his money.
Chris Van Hollen, going back to you, what are the chances that you'll have any kind of a vote on your bill before the midterms? And even if you did, I gather it would not apply to the midterms.
Well, as you mentioned, it passed the House, and I think that they're going to try and bring it up again in the Senate for a vote. In order to get it to a final vote, they have to get 60 votes, which means they have to get at least one Republican senator. Not clear yet whether they'll be able to do that. And as you said, if they were to get one, they'd probably have to modify it in a way that it unfortunately did not apply to these elections. Just to go to the caller's question, I want to be very clear, and I think Jane alluded to this, but this bill requires disclosure for everybody. In other words, it doesn't matter whether you're trying to support a Republican candidate or a Democratic candidate or independent candidate. The rules apply across the board, and I would hope that we would agree that this is important for our democracy, that we have that kind of transparency, because otherwise you really can't have, under our current laws and rules, people secretly channeling millions and millions of dollars into the campaigns without anybody's knowledge, trying to obviously influence the outcome.
But here's my last question for you. How are you going to get people to care about this issue?
Well, the president's been talking more and more about it, and we're just trying to raise people's awareness about the ads they're seeing on television and get people to ask themselves the simple question: who is paying for these ads? Why aren't they telling us who they are? What particular interests are being served by these ads, whether it's on the right or the left? It happens to be the case that right now you've got, as of today, about $22 million that have been spent on House races by these right-wing groups compared to about $3 million that have been spent by labor groups. The labor groups are telling people who they are. They're established, labor groups. But we just believe the American citizens should be asking themselves that question and look very critically at these ads, regardless of what the messages are. Ask themselves whose interests are being served. Why is it that this particular group may be supporting the candidate they're running ads for? Who's behind them? And demand to know. Demand to know, or demand that the candidates on whose behalf these ads are being run, take responsibility.
But even if they demand to know, Congressman Van Hollen, what's the likelihood that they will get to know?
Well, that's exactly the problem, Diane. Unless we pass the Disclose Act, it's unlikely that these interests will voluntarily disclose their big financiers, because otherwise they would have done it voluntarily. And the reason they don't want to tell you is because they recognize very clearly that voters have that information, and we get that information out it will, in many cases, undermine the credibility of the message in the ad. I mean, for example, if you're watching an ad that's against health care reform, and you'd find out that it's being run by a big health insurance company that's been raising their premiums on you every month, that, you know, voters can connect the dots there. And it's been clear in some states like California that require greater disclosure that it has had an impact on the credibility of the ads when the voter finds out who's bankrolling the ad and what particular economic interest they have in the outcome of the vote.
Congressman Chris VantenHollen, he's Democrat of Maryland, chairman of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. He and Senator Chuck Schumer have proposed legislation that would require more disclosure as to funding of various political campaigns. Thank you so much for joining us, sir.
Good to be with you, Diane.
Thank you. And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. I wonder if we can talk for a moment, Brody. The congressman referred to $22 million raised so far coming from corporations, $3 million from unions. Is that about right?
He said how much money has been spent so far in some of his House races. And to be fair, Republicans plan on spending a lot more of their money in Senate races, I believe. However, I think at the end of the day, the numbers will be fairly equal. I mean, one of the strange things about campaign finance is that if you go to the Federal Election Commission, which tracks campaign finance spending, and say to them how much money was spent on the 2008 election, or in this case, 2010 election, they will never be able to tell you. No one knows exactly how much money is being spent. And part of that, not entirely, but part of that, is from labor unions. Labor unions spend a lot of money on elections, mainly by getting volunteers to go knock on doors, putting flyers in their monthly newsletters saying, you know, vote for this person or vote against that person. Most of that is not disclosed. And having a group of people go out and knocking on doors it matters. That makes a big difference, and that's not disclosed.
Jan Behrend, to what extent do you think that this expanded ability to contribute to political campaigns has really energized both sides?
I think that's a very good point, that really energy in the political arena is cyclical. I mean, if we were talking in 2008 about where all of the independent spending and all of the fundraising was occurring, it would be over in the Obama campaign and with the Democrats, who vastly outraised and outspent the Republicans in that election. The energy in the 2010 off-season election, however, is reversed. Clearly, there's much more energy on the conservative Republican side as of right now. However, I have to point out that when it comes to spending thus far, and Brody's right that we're going to have much more data after the election, because a lot of the reporting really kicks in starting September 2 under the disclosure laws. But up to now, the spending has been pretty much equal, and it has been in some very unusual races, particularly with these special elections that we had earlier this year. In Massachusetts, in the special election to fill former Senator Kennedy's seat, that which occurred before the Citizens United case, there was about $2.5 million spent on each side on behalf of Coakley, the Democratic candidate, and Senator Scott Brown, the Republican candidate, by unions and corporations under the old rules. In fact, there was so much money spent in that election that a week before it occurred, the broadcasters in Massachusetts and the surrounding area announced they had no more television or radio time to sell. So we are witnessing two things, in my view. One is you have a growing familiarity with the rules, an incentive to spend, and I think we're going to see it being spent on both sides, although if the energy keeps up, it's likely to be a little more on the conservative Republican side this year.
Jane.
You know, I mean, there's a tendency, I think, to think, well, since both parties are spending equally, gee, it's fair. But I actually think there was a piece that caught my eye that's in the Harvard Political Review right now that I thought makes a good point, which is that this arms race, in fact, has some downsides, which is that both parties become more and more alike because they both have to get so much money and they have to raise it from the same places. So you see more and more the Democrats are going to the hedge funds and Wall Street for their money. And it makes, you know, it probably has some connection to why when there's financial regulation reform, it's fairly toothless.
And there was a recent incident in Minnesota over a Target donation. Do you know about that, Jan?
Yes, and I think this is, in perhaps an unintended way, a little related to the comments from Congressman Van Hollen, which I'll be glad to comment on after
the break.
All right,
after we come back, and we'll take your calls as well. Stay with us.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by Vicki and Roger Sant and Island Press, which offers solutions to environmental problems in print, in person, and online at islandpress.org. By Saab, for people who have a different perspective on driving, learn more at saabusa.com. Saab, move your mind. And by ABC, featuring Detroit 187, a docudrama following the challenges faced by a homicide unit, premieres tonight at 10, 9 Central. This is NPR.
19th century actress Sarah Bernhardt had a flair for the dramatic both on and off the stage. A new biography separates fact from the many fictions of her life, Bernhardt's improbable rise to stardom, and why audiences adored her. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. And just to round out that last point, let's talk about the Target incident in Minnesota. Jan Barron.
There was a group organized in Minnesota that solicited and received donations from several corporations, including Target Company, and they then sponsored some advertising in support of a particular candidate. The candidate and the advertising became controversial because of the candidate's position on gay rights, which was unrelated to the advertising content. But because Target was disclosed as a funder and because it was had a reputation for supporting gay and lesbian rights, there were protests launched against the company for supporting this type of ad, and there was even a proposed a boycott of the company, which I don't think has been successful, but there's been a great deal of publicity. This does relate to the points that Congressman Van Hollen was trying to make when he was with us in support of his bill called the Disclose Act, which he says simply wants disclosure. It was Anatole France who once commented on the majesty of the law that it applies equally, that both the rich and the poor are prohibited from stealing bread or from sleeping under bridges. And in his unique way, he was commenting on the fact that laws can apply equally, but they affect people in a different way.
Sheila, do you want to comment on that Target ad?
Well, I just want to say, I think that's a good example of a corporation spending money, getting caught up in something they would, you know, in retrospect, I think they wish they had not made that investment because it flies so directly in the face of their stand on gay rights. But it's notable that here's a public corporation spending money, and most corporations will not spend directly for or against candidates precisely because they don't want that retribution from their customers. So we're not going to see direct investments from corporations in big ways in advertising, but it's going to be indirect through perhaps front organizations.
Here's an email from Nancy in Cincinnati who says, I think your commentator is missing the point. The point is hidden contributions. Obama may have had more money in the 2008 election, but it was not from groups with hidden contributors. It was from people who put their names on the contributions of less than $2,400 each. Jan?
Well, that is true of both sides when it comes to contributions that actually go to the campaigns. But in terms of money that's spent independently of the campaigns by these so-called outside groups, the funders of groups like, the Chamber of Commerce or the group that Congressman Van Hollen mentioned, Americans for Prosperity, are not disclosed because of the current law. On the other hand, one of the biggest spenders in these campaigns is organized labor. It's the AFL-CIO, the Service Employees Union. Of course, they get their funding in a different way. I mean,
that's why I want to understand the comparison between the spending of corporations and the spending of unions.
Well, if you start by just looking at contributions to outside groups to spending on advertisements on behalf of candidates, labor unions have spent far more money than corporations in the last decade. This year, I think things are going to change. I think this year corporations are going to outspend labor unions. But thus far, labor unions have spent far more money. And I think that part of that's a natural development because Republicans were in charge. You had President Bush was in the White House. Republicans controlled the House and Senate. Corporations were happy. They didn't have much to fear, whereas labor unions and liberal groups were on the defensive. And they knew if they wrote million-dollar checks to groups, they could have an influence. And they have. Now we've got the opposite. President Obama is in office. Democrats control the House and Senate. And businesses are on the defensive. So the situation has switched.
There's a piece in the New York Times this morning, though, that quotes a labor leader saying, we don't have the financial clout to match what corporate America is doing in this cycle right now. I don't know if it's true or not, but I think it was Richard Trumka saying that.
Sheila.
Well, that may or may not be true. It remains to be seen. And unfortunately, because of the lag in disclosure, even when we have it, we won't get that until well after the elections are over.
It could be years before we know. Isn't that the other problem here?
There are many problems in disclosure. And another one that's going to come confront us very soon is the lack of disclosure about bundlers. We have had some voluntary disclosure by the presidential candidates in past cycles about their bag men, you know, the really important people who are gathering mega money for these campaigns. And that's going to confront us again next year.
All right. To Syracuse, New York. Good morning, Gideon. You're on the air.
Good morning, Diane, and I love your show.
Thank you
very much. My question is, you know, my concern is that at a certain point when we allow corporations to speak and afford them the same sort of rights as individuals, that in fact they distort the political dialogue to the point where it actually makes it impossible for government to function properly. So if it's the bailout and determining where money should go, that there's a disproportionate impact that the corporate form gives moneyed interest in comparison to an individual. And I guess I was thinking of Andrew's email earlier in the show and the difference between a George Soros and a corporation. I don't feel so bad about a corporation. I don't feel so bad about George Soros giving money that is his alone. But I do have a problem with a corporation, which is just a bunch bunch of individuals pooling their resources to augment their voice. And so my question is, isn't there a difference?
Yeah, Barron.
Well, constitutionally, the Supreme Court has ruled over decades that independent spending is protected by the First Amendment, whether you're a billionaire or a political party or a PAC or, in this case, a corporation or a union. It may come as news to the caller and your listeners, Diane, but even before the Citizens United case, 26 states and the District of Columbia had no prohibition on corporate spending in campaigns, that they, prior to that, under state law for state campaigns, could spend as much money as they wanted to as long as they filed reports with the State Election Commission. And under that system, there was no evidence up to that time that business organizations had a overwhelming role. In fact, the evidence was that when it came to independent spending, they were the number three or number four spender of that sort, the first being, again, organized labor, second, wealthy individuals, and in some states, Indian tribes, were spending more money than corporations. So it's not to say that there isn't a theoretical possibility that some source of spending in our political system could overwhelm it through its wealth. That, however, has not happened either with billionaires or with corporations or unions or other forms of associations that participate in this type of spending.
Jane,
thus far.
This is a question for Jan because he's the expert on campaign finance, and listen, I'm not. But have any of these states allowed for unlimited anonymous spending the way that the new entities, these 501c4s, do? Well, and has there been nationally anonymous unlimited spending as there can be now?
Well, the short answer is yes, in the sense that anonymity has occurred in the spending. For example, if the Sierra Club or the Chamber of Commerce or the National Right to Work Committee spent money, they did not have to disclose where they get their money as an organization, but they did have to file a report and say, we spent this money, and this is how much we spent, and this is what the advertising was that we spent it on. In terms of disclosure of the sort that the disclose bill is seeking, they basically want to know, and they want to discourage any money that's being raised, even by established organizations like the Chamber of Commerce or the Sierra Club, just as examples. They want to discourage them from spending money by basically discouraging contributors from allowing their donations to be spent for that purpose.
Brody.
I think it's also a broader consequence of this increasing spending on by outside groups. Whether it's the right or left, it doesn't really matter. Before 2002, the unions and wealthy individuals and corporations could give $1 million contributions to the political parties. And that made the political parties the single strongest, most influential force in politics. And what political parties do, whether they're on the right or the left, is unify the party, bring people together, bring in the Republican Party, Mike Castle, who is the most liberal of the Republicans on the right, and some of your most conservative members or rather the other way around, on the right, bring them all together. Now that political parties can't raise these contributions and these funds are going to outside groups, the political parties are becoming less influential.
And now individuals and corporations can and they have their own directly.
And they have their
candidates.
Own agendas. They have their own agendas,
right.
Which means I think that it's leading to the polarization of politics, that you have no unifying, moderating force in politics.
Sheila.
I think that's a really important point because at least we knew back in the days of soft money to the national party committees, who the RNC and the DNC were. Now we have these front groups, potentially fly-by-night groups that pop up, drop a ton of money at the last minute when the opponent cannot respond to it. They don't have the time to raise the money or even run the ads, and the ad time is bought up. They can't respond. And then these organizations can disappear. The Swift Boat Veterans for Truth, they had a fine years after they had essentially disbanded. It was, too little too late.
Now, Sheila, what is your concern beyond the fact that voters will not necessarily know who's behind what they're voting for. Does or do your concerns go farther?
Well, we're not a reform group, so we're not advocating for public financing or, you know, no regulation. I mean, this really spans the gamut of folks wanting totally anonymous donations. Some would say we should just have them all secret and then nobody can gain any advantage, to others saying we should get private money out of politics. Our position is we need to, as long as we have private money in politics, we need to know where it's coming from so that people can judge the credibility of the source, spending money, running the ads, and understand how money fuels our system so that they can make the best choice at the ballot box.
All right, to Charles in Enfield, New Hampshire. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. I would like to comment with, in the form of a question, I guess, consistency of principle regarding your discussion of the Koch contributions.
Sure.
I'm willing to accept the libertarian originalist interpretation of the First Amendment regarding free speech, but I'm sure the founding fathers assumed we would know the identity of the speaker or the essayist. For example, for labor unions, if the AFL-CIO gives something, I know their position. But the Center for Concerned Citizens, for example, who knows what that position is? I think one of your speakers just commented on that fly-by-night thing.
All right. Thanks for calling, Jane.
Well, I do think that you can learn an awful lot by seeing where the money is coming from. And some of it is very interesting. I've been looking at the money behind the Tea Party groups, and there are a range of groups. But one of the things that pops out when you do sort of take a closer look is that an awful lot of the people who are involved in organizations that are organizing the Tea Party they're not new faces to politics. The media describes this as a sort of a grassroots movement that has just popped up and something new. You look at it and you see many retreads, many of the same old players.
Familiar names.
You see Dick Armey at the head of Freedom Works. You see at American Crossroads, which is not really a Tea Party group, but is it, you see American you see Karl Rove at Tea Party Patriots, which is a group that's announcing today that it's raised a lot of money and they're not saying where it came from. There's involved with somebody named Gary Aldrich, who wrote a book that was trashing the Clintons. I mean, these are people who've been on the sort of edges of politics for a long time. Fred Malik is involved in one of the big groups. He goes back to the Nixon days. It's you learn a lot, and I'm sure in the same way you learn a lot when you look at the liberal groups. These are people who've been in the trenches a long time.
And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Sheila.
I just wanted to comment on the Tea Party Express, because there the concern, I think, is a little different. Or there's a new concern raised in a recent New York Times article that talks about Sal Russo and how important Russo, Marsh & Associates is, this organization that really kind of birthed Tea Party Express. It started as Our Country Deserves Better, and the accusation essentially in the story is that they've latched on to the energy behind the Tea Party, the true grassroots movement, to kind of use it in a way to exploit it for their own personal gain. And so I wonder if, there the story might be slightly different, that donors may not have caught wind of the central role of these longtime GOP operatives that perhaps are using this to their own advantage. But they've been tremendously influential and very strategic in their spending.
And here's the last email from David in Grand Rapids, Michigan, who says, wonder where your guests think the Tea Party stands on unlimited individual, corporate, and foreign government funding for U.S. elections. Seems like they would be against it, since it does take power away from the people. Do they stand with the president on this issue? Jan Behrens.
Well, I don't know that the Tea Party is, in fact, a political party. From what I've read, it seems to be a very dispersed group of
people aren't making contributions.
Well, they are funding a movement of some sort that is not aligned with a candidate. The money is not going to candidates. I would also point out that foreign money, whether it's limited or unlimited, is illegal under federal law and may not be contributed to any candidate for any office in the United States, nor can they spend the money for independent expenditures and things of that sort.
But just on that point, if you have a corporation with foreign offices, foreign locations, how do you know? How in the world can you possibly know, Sheila?
Well, we already do have PACs that have that are U.S.-based representatives or subsidiaries of foreign corporations. But the real concern now is just that if it's giving to a 501c, a tax-exempt organization, we have no idea if whether it's domestic or foreign.
Sheila Kremholtz, Jan Barron, Brody Mullins, and Jane Mayer. You also heard from Congressman Chris Van Hollen. Thank you all so much. Thanks for listening. I'm Diane Rehm.